Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Good morning, video games. Welcome to Filthy Casuals, a podcast about video games hosted by three very kind and extremely knowledgeable boys. Thank you very much for joining us. My name is Tommy Dasilo. With me, as always...
Hey, Tommy, it's Ben Vanel here. Excited to be doing this early 2000s episode. I feel like I'm back in high school again, sitting here at the cool kids table, joined by our third co-host.
The jock with the Magic the Gathering cards. It's Adam. I feel stupid when you say knowledgeable at the moment because I always have a Google list in front of me of like 2001 games.
Yeah. Yeah. We went to university and studied video games and we've memorized it all. Yeah.
To be fair, this is literally what I did at university as well.
Yes.
Was just Google like, what do people think about Mad Men for my film studies course?
I think I was at uni just around the time Wikipedia was becoming a thing that people had to be like, you can't use Wikipedia.
Yeah, same. Mm.
Yeah.
It was very much, maybe it had already been that way for a bit. By the end of my time at uni, I feel like people were starting to come around of like, go to Wikipedia, but then look at the sources down the bottom and
right.
then go from
yeah.
there.
Yes.
Yeah. Was there an equivalent? Would it have been like, what, Encyclopedia Britannica back in the day?
A library.
You can't yeah, just copy and...
Library.
No, but in but terms of like the bane of educators, like this, this kind of...
I thought you meant was
where
there...
Where did people get
some
knowledge?
Some way that it was written down on some kind of physical
was
thing?
There any way that people gathered information in
How did anyone know anything? How did people know what the green traffic light meant? Because it wasn't on Wikipedia.
Even if you had a place like that, no one would know how to look it up and find it. You couldn't... It wouldn't work.
No, I mean like new things that come along that are then the bane of educators and it, you know, it takes them a little bit to catch up and go, oh, these kids are just taking the piss.
I bet it would have been
copy
like,
and pasting.
Like the Cliff Notes books and things like that.
We talked about maybe a few weeks ago. I think it was. It was Cliff Notes. It was like someone skimming the basics of a topic and putting out like a little bite-sized book of it, I think.
But
was
see,
it.
We at my high school, we studied a Shakespeare text and the prescribed text that you had to go and buy was a Cliff Notes version. So we were studying it direct from a thing that already had it written down in the margins of it.
Weird.
It was almost like our teacher was just like, I can't be fucked summing this up for them. You know, like, so this is what that actually means.
I was going to say, and man, if that's part of why I didn't enjoy uni that much because very quickly it becomes apparent like, oh, I've paid a lot of money for a list of 5 books.
Oh, completely. Here. That's all it is, yeah.
And then I have to also buy those books separately or go to the library, but they're already out.
Yeah.
So I'm saying education is a scam. Don't educate yourselves.
Just listen to podcasts instead.
Dude, you can find out everything you need to know from a 2-hour-long YouTube video that's been cut together by a fucking psycho.
Actually, I was wondering in my head, I wonder what the new version of Wikipedia is that's very frustrating to educate. It's probably like, hardcore history. Just people just transcribing hardcore history.
In the footnotes, it's like, this is from Joe Rogan episode 1300.
And they actually say that all the stuff in the textbook you gave me is completely wrong.
Yeah.
It's all made up.
Yeah, I had to get high to really understand what I was writing down as well. So, we're here. We're continuing our history of video games. Mm. This is part...
The definitive text.
Definitive text.
University ready.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I wonder if anyone that would be amazing if someone quotes us in an assignment.
Yeah, we'll get used in universities as evidence of serial killers getting away with it in plain sight.
I feel like that's directed at me.
So this is part 5 of our comprehensive history of video games. We are up to the early 2000s. Mm. Should we do a quick previously on video games? So,
if you go listen to the last 4 episodes, right?
Well, so we were wrapping up the PlayStation, wrapping up the Nintendo 64 was at the end of its life, and
they kind of spill over into
the year 2000 as well.
Yeah. What doesn't really spill over is Sega.
No,
right?
Sega's done.
2001, the Dreamcast is discontinued.
Right.
So it's there for a little bit in 2000, but already by that time, the writing is very quickly on the wall for the Dreamcast.
Right.
And so we begin, we leave the 90s with this like widespread Y2K panic.
Yep. Yeah.
People thinking that the world is going to go topsy-turvy. And
they were off by 20 years.
For the first part of that decade, it things do feel weird because all of a sudden you have Sega publishing Sonic games on other consoles,
oh,
which to
yes.
begin with does... I remember thinking like, this is fucking bizarre.
The only company that Y2K really hit was Sega.
Yeah.
That's why they discontinued everything. They're like, it broke. We can't do it anymore. Yeah. Sonic's for Xbox now, I guess.
Yeah, Y2K was actually them trying to make a good Sonic game.
Well, weirdly, this is why it never happened.
The system just fucking crashed and wiped out a whole bunch of computers.
Little Clippy comes up and is like, you're making a Sonic game. Are you trying to actually make this bad? I think I'll correct this. The Xbox, weirdly, I don't know if this is jumping ahead too much, but the Microsoft Xbox, which there was weird. Well, actually, let's talk, because coming into this generation with the PS2 and the GameCube and the Xbox was the first time I was super aware of a next generation.
Right.
And where things were... seemed like they were taking these big leaps, and it was like, wow, I can't believe the power of the Xbox, which I've decided on my own and haven't been caught up in a marketing hype about at all.
It is weird though, because like PlayStation kicks off in the mid 90s.
Yes.
But then there's still Sega.
Yep.
And Nintendo's still going strong.
Yeah.
So it doesn't feel like this delineated point. But it is probably the introduction of the Xbox and the continuation and the success of PlayStation 2. That marks, oh, this is a whole new bunch of players. Like, this is not the old video games industry that we used to know.
Definitely,
things are changing.
Definitely during the 2000s, they get bigger than they ever have before. Because, like, the Halo 2 launch, I remember in particular, being like, you know, news stories about, this is the biggest launch of an entertainment product that has ever existed. This is bigger than any movie.
Yeah.
This is bigger than everything. People are like, all the nerds have crawled out of their basements to line up at midnight for Halo 2. I remember newsreaders would always say it like they couldn't fucking understand the words.
Yeah.
Because it was a video game. They're like, Halo? You know that fucking word is.
Yeah, if that was a movie, you would have been fine with it.
It was a Beyonce song 5 years later and you're like, now I get it. But the incredulity that they were going like, how do these sweaty fucks have so much money?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I hated that.
Maybe
they got big.
Yeah, before we jump into that point, there's a bunch of little nerds in their basements that never left. And those were the nerds playing PCs.
They loved it. But then also, no, they weren't, because The Sims also blew the fuck up.
That is very true.
That was a PC-only game.
Yeah.
I guess maybe there was a Mac version or something, possibly. And then there were ports of it at some point. But it was predominantly played on a beige personal computer.
Yep.
And The Sims was fucking massive straight away.
It's one of the biggest casual games ever.
Yeah.
Like, we talked about the arcade, you know, a lot at the start of this series, and that's pretty casual. It's people just, you know, walking around being like, all right, I'm having a beer, I'm playing Pac-Man.
Yeah.
But this is casual gaming in the home that you've had to spend money on properly, and it's huge. The Sims maybe is one of the most... highest selling franchises of
incredibly
all time.
Accessible.
Yeah
It taps into just being able to play God.
Yes.
It's kind of a, I guess it's not quite open world, but it's like very much early thing, like kind of taps into that thing of like, this is sort of limitless. You can really do whatever you want with this.
It's sandbox rather than open world.
Yeah.
People love sand, and the there's a million expansions that come out for it. I like that first Sims game and the second one I played.
Yeah, I think I was pretty skeptical at the start because I was a SimCity fan.
Right.
It's like, oh, this is like for non-gamers. This is for casuals.
Do you remember as well something I found appealing about it initially, because I liked SimCity. What? What did you say?
What the fuck did you just say? You try and toss it off as an aside? Let's stop the whole podcast.
From memory, I think they took this out before it actually launched. Mm. But part of The Sims originally was going to be like, they'll live inside of your SimCity city.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember like SimCopter and SimFucking car?
It was called something different, but you could drive around the city you'd made in SimCity 2000.
Yes.
See, I didn't know that, and that always has seemed weird to me that it's a kind of a spin-off.
Right. Mm.
That there was never any link between the two of them.
There was
other than just
be.
Like rough naming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you were meant to be able to go like, yeah, your Sims can live in SimCity, and when you go back in the Sims, they'll be like, oh, I hate downtown or whatever. So, but. I think they took all that out because it was difficult.
Yeah, it would have been. It's two games in one. That's a crazy use of resources.
Yeah.
That's great. You take your Sims into the city of SimCity and the first thing they do is go into the police station. They're like, I was in the pool and then the ladder to get out of the pool just disappeared. Someone came and took it and then I almost drowned. They're
also,
like,
a UFO came the other day and destroyed half of the city.
I heard someone typing in a cheat code and then I was naked and I didn't have any nipples though. But yeah, The Sims very big, heaps of expansions for it over the course of the early 2000s. Because SimCity, I mean, The Sims 2 came out in 2004 then as well. So those first two were both in the early 2000s.
Yeah, right.
In terms of like the actual kind of turn of the century, I was playing a lot of Elon Musk's favorite game, Deus Ex.
I did not know that was his favorite game.
It's his fucking Twitter profile picture.
Oh, great.
It's JC Denton. So, yeah. Oh, man. He identifies with a technological man who literally has the first initials JC as a very, like, you know when a spy nods way too hard at another spy in a movie and they're like, stop it. No one's meant to know that we're a spy.
Yes.
It was a nod bigger than that to like, maybe he's a bit of a savior. So, fuck Elon. But anyway, it's a great game.
It changed... Like games.
Yeah.
Like it invented a new genre, basically.
It kind of came off the back of like System Shock 2 and that type of game in the 90s, but expanded the idea of, like, they called it emergent gameplay, they started to call it around this time, which was similar to the sandbox thing, where it's like there's so many little systems in place that if you push on one of these dominoes, the game's going to react in a bunch of different ways.
The marketing tagline of, you can approach this mission whichever way you want. Yeah.
And
it's like you can do stealth or you can go in shooting. Yeah. I'm sorry, but that's the only two.
Every one of those games, every time they showed off one of those, like, there's so many ways to approach a problem. Here, I'll go in and talk to this person and they've let me in. And now I've gone around the back and there's a key in the bin.
Yep.
Now I'm in. Or there's like a little fucking event and I've gone in that way.
Yes.
Here's the vent. I'm in. What a game.
Yeah.
But Deus Ex was fucking awesome at the time. It had a great cyberpunk story. It was genuinely reactive to you.
Yeah.
Where like you could kill characters earlier than you were meant to and the game would have predicted that and have stuff built to react to that. It was massive. At the time, I think people said it looked kind of plain.
Right.
But I thought it looked great. It was on that like original Unreal Engine. It just had a very good vibe, like a aesthetic.
Yeah, I remember Deus Ex being one of the big ones that was passed around my school as a pirated copy.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
That was chlamydia at my school.
It was that and Disney skateboarding.
Oh.
Were the two games that were like always on our fucking school network that someone...
Oh.
I love watching Mickey Mouse do a kickflip and questioning whether the terrorists are really the bad guys.
Yeah,
that's what
I'm
into.
I think it was just like one kid that knew how to upload stuff and find cracked stuff, but for whatever reason, those were the only two games that he'd been able to find. He was like, well, it's better. You know, breaking the law is better than not breaking the law, so Disney skateboarding it is.
Imagine how fucking painful it would be if you were Donald Duck skating and you fell on your beak. Imagine falling on a beak.
Crazy that that's the first place your mind went with that.
Well, I'm an empathetic person.
It actually wasn't too. It was just basically Tony Hawk, but with a. So actually, gameplay wise, pretty cool game.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Mm.
Well, Deus Ex was better. I'm going to go out on a limb and say, and I reckon it still holds up to this day. And if
really?
You've never played it. This is a guess, but I would imagine that you would still be able to get something out of it today.
Right.
Maybe.
Knowing that it was revolutionary at the time.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
There's elements of the story that were a little more fantastical, as is the case with all, to me, sort of cyberpunky or apocalypse straddling bits of fiction now, where maybe playing a game that's about a police state gone too far isn't going to be your cup of tea right now.
Yes.
But... hey, it's got Elon's vote of approval.
A game that Deus Ex made me think of in terms of approaching a mission however you want is a game called Hitman, colon codename 47, I think, maybe?
Yeah, yeah, Hitman, codename, he had a barcode and he was number 47.
That came out late 2000, and yeah, very similar in some ways. It had great physics, it was all about like genuinely blending into the area that you're in, stealing like people's clothes and going through, you know, restaurants as a waiter and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, similar sort of thing of like, okay, you can sneak in or you can garrote this guy and throw him in a bin and walk through the front door. Really, yeah, emergent gameplay. It was a little more contained. It was like, here, you're in one level. You got to assassinate this one guy. Mm. But again, for the time, it was really, really cool.
Definitely. I think both of these games had the thing that PC games did around this late 90s, early 2000s time, where they seemed a lot more big and complex.
Yeah.
They were like, there was more going on in a Deus Ex or a Hitman than there was in even very kind of intricate, complicated console games. Like, I don't know, Majora's Mask came out in 2000 as well, which is very good. But there was a big gap between what the two different things were capable of at this point and what type of games you get on them. Because like these big RPGs, like the old style kind of, what's that word they use for the camera angle? Isometric?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was like Baldur's Gate 2
yep.
and like Icewind Dale.
Yeah. Neverwinter Nights.
Yeah.
Yep.
Arcanum of Steamwork and Magic's Obscura.
I remember reading about that in PC Why would Power you Play.
Like, let's give our game a name that no one ever wants to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fucking absurd.
Good thing these PC boxes are so fucking huge. We need all the space we can get to write this title.
That's actually why they were so big. It's a fun fact.
Thank you to the person who put in our Patreon Facebook group after we talked about that last episode and someone had some like this a box for Day of the Tentacle that's like, that protrudes out. It's like a, what would you call it? Like, it's completely three-dimensional.
Like a 3D polygon? Pentagon? It's five-sided.
It's a 3D pentagon.
It's like a pyramid with the top cut off, sort of.
It must have been a nightmare to be someone like working in a store sold these games, just like trying to find the space for everything.
I think that's a grombus.
The 3D rhombus is a grombus.
I think it's called a grombus.
I believe you're right. Citation not needed on that one.
Yeah.
But you're right. Yeah, there was all the
dodecahedron.
All the isometric RPGs. There were also first-person RPGs.
What?
Yeah. In even bigger, more crazily open worlds than the ones we've discussed so far. Can anyone think of a game that might match that description? Kids at home, say it out loud to your iPod.
Is it 4x4 Evo?
Yes.
Oh, no. Steel Beasts? This is
Steel Beasts?
I don't know what that is. Is
Disney's
it
3D RPG?
Yep.
Dark Reign
2.
Oh, I played Dark Reign 2. That was an RTS, right?
Giant Citizen Kabuto. Fucking stupid ass name. That was where you played a street. Anyway,
The Elder Scrolls Morrowind is the one. We've spoken about how Skyrim is kind of, for all of us, a little bit of a... Well, Tommy, you weren't interested in this series at all.
Yeah.
But Skyrim is like the pale imitation of Morrowind because we played it at the time, Adam.
Right.
And our minds were blown by Morrowind.
It was a huge feat, it seemed like, at the time.
Yeah. Walking around.
I was so into it. Yeah, that clown distances of a game was...
Quentin Tarantino's favorite game,
he
actually.
He loved it.
A huge feat. But yeah, I love Morrowind. I reinstalled it recently. It still holds up. It has such a crazily interesting aesthetic. It's different to Skyrim. It's not that boring medieval thing.
It was weird. It was houses made of mushrooms, and that's the only weird thing I remember about. But that's pretty weird.
Yeah, if you've never played Super Mario, it was bizarre.
Yeah.
House made of mushroom, you go in and then you've got to match up three spinning tiles to get a little bonus.
I think I am thinking of Super Mario Brothers 3.
Mario wind. but that was huge. That was really, really cool. And I guess, yeah, if you're younger and you kind of take something like Skyrim for granted, Morrowind was the first time anyone had seen anything approaching that scale.
Totally. I loved Max Payne.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
Yep.
I loved
Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah. No, Matt Damon.
No.
Was it Mark Wahlberg? You're probably right. It doesn't seem like a Matt Damon thing to do.
Yeah.
Was Matt Damon in a... Well, he would have been in a different movie, but I don't know.
Yeah, he was in Ocean's 11.
Like, the sort of realistic tactical shooter started coming into big vogue.
Yeah. Right. Like Rainbow Six?
That would have existed like late 90s, but that still was going. And Ghost Recon.
Oh, right.
Operation Flashpoint, which my brother played so much of that. It was a very straight up and down military shooter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you are being simulated here.
Right.
Black and White. Remember that? That was fucking...
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Molyneux.
Yeah, yeah.
Peter.
Peter, that's it.
Yeah, all these games, I would just see them at the video store, and like, we just never had a computer that could handle them. But I'm like, yeah, I'm very familiar with a lot of them from looking at the box going like, damn, this looks cool. I think we had, you know, that was like a big part of PC gaming that I remember, like having to scan the back of the box to see if your machine at home was up to scratch and being like... And every now and then, because my local video store would hire out PC games, which funny in retrospect because they're all so easy to illegally copy.
Mm.
So every now and then would kind of like, you know, look at the back of the box and go, I don't reckon our computer at home can handle this, but you know what? Maybe I'll be able to trick it if I just chuck the disc in and get away with it and put it in and just be like, it either not loading or loading and running so shittily and being like, yeah, I guess I'm going to have to take this back and
I remember
try and get a refund.
Getting Battlefield 1942 and when getting into it, everything was either invisible or blue. All the walls were either not there or everything was kind of blue. It was the weirdest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Wow, okay, that's a huge call. But I do stand by that.
It's cool that there was so much variety here at the time as well. There's so many different types of games for so many different types of gamers that like the PC was like really eclectic and cool back then.
Black and White is a great example of that because it's not really any genre.
It's like a god game, it's they call it.
It was vaguely real-time strategy in that you had little villages that you like built stuff in and encouraged people to come and live in.
Yeah.
I guess sort of Sims-ish as well in that case. And then, yeah, that god thing where you're like looking over all this stuff and like fighting other gods. But it was also like a Tamagotchi because you raised this animal from a baby.
Yeah.
You stole it
from a baby and then you raised it.
But yeah, that was a crazy kind of game. You just don't see... I guess maybe you see that innovation in indie games these days.
For sure, yeah.
Yeah.
It was just like it was the focus of a whole platform in a way, which was really cool at the time. Other PC games, I think there's in 2004.
Yes.
Actually, in 2003, Call of Duty came out, the first one, which is a pretty big deal. But in 2004, get a load of this quadruple hitter of like that's when the modern FPS genre kind of started in a weird way.
Right, because you mentioned Battlefield 1942.
Yeah.
It's not like a Call of Duty. It's sort of like you spawn on this map, you run around killing people sort of in a...
It's all multiplayer. It was like 100 players, which was a big difference.
That's right.
Or something, maybe 64
or
something like
that. It's a big LAN party game, I think, Battlefield 1942, because it was so well set up for that.
Yeah. And it did feel more... having vehicles be just like you could get in and out really easily in FPSs was...
That's right. That was a
big
new
deal.
Thing. Yeah.
That and Halo both did that.
But I think from memory, like the story in Battlefield 1942, it was like, well, you're spawning on Normandy. You go from this point to this checkpoint to this checkpoint and then you're done.
It was all multiplayer.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was, you know, pretty popular around then. That PC multiplayer, Counter-Strike-y, Battlefield 1942-y, Unreal Tournament-y 2-y. type of game was very popular.
But it wasn't what Call of Duty is and what so much of FPS gaming is now.
But then Call of Duty was just Medal of Honor, but it was literally the people who had made Medal of Honor Allied Assault, a bunch of them splintering off to make their own studio.
Right.
Then they made a bunch of Call of Duty games and then splintered off to do the Titanfall ones.
Oh, yeah,
so there's like a direct...
Lineage.
Don't put words in my mouth, even if they're the right one.
Okay. Line. Just say line then.
But that, so in 2004, all in the same year, Far Cry 1, Doom 3, Half-Life 2, and Halo 2 all came out.
Wow.
Yep.
So,
yep.
And all of those, I think, are pretty directly comparable to what people consider a first-person shooter game to be now.
Yes.
In heaps of ways. So... Yeah, this early 2000s was very formative for that type of shooter.
Yep.
And Half-Life 2, speaking of PC shit, was the first game that was on Steam. You had to have Steam to play this game.
Right.
And at the time, I remember being like, this fucking sucks. I'm going on Australian internet. Mm. It's taking forever. There's no reason that I can see to have this because it's never existed before. Mm. So it just feels like this weird extra fucking irritating layer of getting to play something.
I need clarification on one part of what you just said.
Yeah.
Were at that age, were you that aware that Australian internet is bad when compared to the rest of the world?
I was like 15.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't remember knowing anything about
our
internet being any worse than the rest of the world.
We'd maybe just gotten like broadband or trying to or something. It was at the point where because things like Battlefield 1942 and Counter-Strike were so popular too, I was very aware of how laggy. Yeah, how much less I enjoyed those games than anyone else.
That was also my only like touch point for internet was like, why am I just like, people keep walking past and I'm shooting and then they're gone and it's like I couldn't play online games. Yeah. I just had to decide that I wasn't going to.
It took us so long to get broadband because my dad thought it was just going to be a fad. He thought everyone would just go back to dial-up. He's like, use the phone line, not getting another thing.
So
like,
he understood that the internet was going to be big, but the speed of it wasn't going to factor in.
Exactly, yes. He thought that the popularity of it and people needing to do more and more on it wouldn't lead them to wanting it to be faster. He's like, nah.
Your dad is Malcolm Turnbull.
Yeah. I'm not getting a second phone line if I don't need... That was the other thing. Dial up and only one phone line. Brutal time. So all this stuff was just absolutely off my radar.
Mm-hmm. There's a few other sort of big PC hitters. Games, obviously, but I doubt we can really go through everything.
I think like Total War starting in this period is a big one. Diablo 2, obviously. Ico comes out
on the PS2.
Oh really, was that? Oh yes,
yeah. So we'll get to that motherfucker.
Oh, Warcraft 3.
Oh yeah, and World of Warcraft in 2004.
Well, yeah, World of Warcraft, yes.
Yeah, that
2004 then is like maybe the biggest year
it's
in games.
Huge. San Andreas came out that year. I remember loving that year.
Oh baby.
What there were some other big fucking things that came out in 2004. Let me dig into the old memory banks here.
He's just looking into the middle distance.
I've still got dial up and there's got to be something else. Halo 2 was big. Maybe those are the ones I was fucking thinking of.
Yeah.
Oh, Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines came out. I enjoyed that game. That was similar to Deus Ex in the like kind of emergent-y fucking way.
Yeah, you're right. In terms of PC games in 04, Rome Total War, which is probably the one that got big, I think.
Yeah.
The Sims 2 is 2004. That might be it for PC, but there's like a fuckload of games on other. Fable.
Well, that was again the Xbox.
Really? Yeah. I think just because I had a PC through this whole time, I just played these.
So
all on PC.
So many of these like launched on the Xbox because Microsoft was already throwing money at stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of things that might have just been PC games like Splinter Cell and like a bunch of these, like Knights of the Old Republic,
mm-hmm.
came out on there either alongside or initially, but were like kind of primarily developed for the Xbox.
Right.
The second Deus Ex game was, and people complained about it a lot at the time because they were like, it got made all consoleized.
Right, yes. God, that was a thing that started getting said a lot during this period.
there was still a big enough difference between the power that a PC was capable of and what a console could do, and then people hadn't figured out how to translate those very complex PC controls into a controller format.
Yep.
That there was a gap between how those games played for this whole set of years.
Completely.
So and that negatively affected, like that second Deus Ex game was a lot worse than the first one.
Right.
Partly because of decisions they made around the design. It was a lot shorter and it looked weird. Mm-hmm. It looked bad to me. But none of them have really been as good as that first one.
Yeah.
Not really close. But
definitely
like things getting, you know, consoleized and all the dumb terms that got used around then was a big deal because those consoles were so wildly fucking popular.
Yeah, well, let's maybe kick off with the first one to be released in this decade, the PlayStation 2.
What a big boy. Look at this little missile launcher coming along. Do you remember that, the missiles thing?
No.
Oh, I hope it's the right... It wasn't North Korea. There was somewhere, maybe it was Iran, somewhere bought a bunch of PS2s.
And use, like, the chips and stuff.
There was something about them that was really good for, like, missile technology.
Oh, wow.
I don't remember the specific details of this story, which you wouldn't have been able to tell from how I was speaking about it. But, like, there was some security scare
or something involving PS2s really early on, because someone realized like the architecture that's in here is exactly what we want to run our fucking missile arrays.
I'm sure back in the day that was like the tidbit fact that the smug person, you know, that the person now that's like, you know, the amount of horsepower that's in an iPhone is the same as what they had the computers that sent the first rocket to the moon.
Yes.
I'm sure like at the time it was like, you know, the PS2 is technically capable of firing off missiles.
Yes.
So, well, the first thing that comes up is UK intelligence dismisses PS2 missile fears.
Okay.
Okay.
So you read the first story, not the second story.
I think, but this is just like political leaders saying that we don't need to worry about. This one's from ABC.
Okay.
Tuesday, the 18th of April, 2000. Among the incredibly realistic warlike games Sony told me were under development when they showed me their sleek black domestic supercomputer last month, Dark Cloud, Pilot Fighter Shooting, and One-on-One Government. What the fuck does that mean?
What the fuck does any of that mean?
What Sony
is that the name of a game, One-on-One Government?
What Sony knew at the time but said little about was that there were concerns their machine could do more than simulate real-life missile guidance. Surely the concern isn't that they can do more than that. Surely it's that they can
more than simulate.
And why are you doing this with a PlayStation 2 instead of just an actual computer? Surely that's better for it.
Yeah. Those missiles were way worse than the PC ones. They got dumbed down. None of the features.
Yeah, it was so South Korea intercepted and sunk a North Korean submarine. Saying as well in this. So what I think it was just like a this is quite powerful,
right. And a bit of that like video games are dangerous scare tactics that were going since the early 90s.
Well, that's so funny, just a company turning up to E3 and showing off their new hardware by going check this out, just launching a bunch of nukes into the sky. What games are coming out of it? We really haven't thought that far.
Fuck off. Yes. We're gonna kill 128 Marios.
I think the next Fallout is coming up on this one.
The PS2 was super fucking powerful for the time, though, for how cheap it was as well.
Right.
Because it was like one of the very first accessible DVD players.
Yep.
Yes.
It was way cheaper than a DVD player was at the time. Mm-hmm. Plus, it was a PS2. And you could like fucking put Linux and stuff on a PS2.
Yeah, right.
Which, I don't know, why would you bother? But
very funny. It's easy to take for granted now because it's just like they've carried through this the whole way through, but that literally their naming strategy was the PlayStation 2.
Yeah.
Like, just insane.
Do you remember those ads they had for it, like, as it was launching, where it was, like, someone with, like, a duck's head in an empty room, and it was just like, wah, and then the PS2 logo would show up? Travel somewhere different, or there was some...
Yeah.
They were just, like, weird, very, you know, let's do Monty Python.
That's a very, like kind of late 90s, early 2000s video game advertising technique that stands out in my head.
Yeah.
The getting people in the big costumes. Weren't there like Crash Bandicoot ads of people dressed up? There's a Super Smash Brothers ad that was like a whole bunch of people like in these big like costumes of Mario and Pikachu like beating the shit out of each other.
They were kind of mocking the idea, I guess, a little bit usually, those ones of people dressing up in the big costumes. Like they weren't sincerely going like, look how cool this big Crash Bandicoot guy looks.
But it was like a comedy thing of like, imagine, the funny like quirky take on,
I remember also, I remember this from last week when I was watching them. The first PlayStation ads had a lot of like the like square and cross and circle stuff appearing in people's veins on their arm. Like they were kind of a little like edgy late 90s experimental film.
In magazines, there were condom wrappers with the had the shape of the buttons. Yep. And obviously the circle is just normal, but... Then you have to get your specialized condoms, like for my triangular dick.
My ex dick is pretty rhombus.
Ex dick, go and give it to you. but yeah, so PS, N64 games and PS1 games are still coming out in 2000.
Right.
But then the PS2 launched in 2000 everywhere, or maybe just in Japan?
March 2000 in Japan. And then October 2000 in North America and November 30 here. So that gap is kind of is closing for very staggered releases.
You had like Tekken Tag Tournament.
Yes, I remember that.
Coming out with it.
Being a big fan of the Tekken franchise and not ever owning a PS2, I was a little frustrated.
It was the PS2 was cool.
Yeah, I was very jealous of everyone who had one.
Weirdly, the GameCube and the Xbox coming along like a year later were both a lot more powerful.
Yeah. The Xbox was the most powerful console ever when it launched.
Yeah. Apparently, it was a little more difficult to develop stuff for than the GameCube was. So things looked pretty good on both of those.
Right.
But the PS2 was often sort of noticeably behind them.
Yeah. I had a friend who had an Xbox. And actually, I had a PC through this whole era. So right. I was playing the Grand Theft Auto games on the PC.
Yeah.
And even, yeah, just going from that to a friend's house playing like Vice City on an Xbox, I was like, oh man, this looks so much better. There was some weird filter. The graphics were higher.
You could make reflections look shinier. Yeah. Like things that were nice, but because every game, if it was multi-platform, was developed with the PS2 as the primary thing generally because they were so popular.
Yeah.
They sold so well that you'd be crazy not to sort of target that.
Yep.
It didn't tend to matter. The PS2 still had good versions of every game.
Yeah, right.
And with like the Grand Theft Autos and stuff, all of those games launched first on the PS2 and then took a while to come to other stuff.
The PC port was often like a year later.
Right.
Mm. Yeah.
And there wasn't a Nintendo version of any of that. Still to this day, I guess they don't come out on there. Ever.
Yeah.
But the impact and like the popularity of Grand Theft Auto in this 5-year period was enormous.
Yeah, reignited conversation about violence in video games and people being influenced to do shitty things because of them. That conversation kind of sparks up again.
Weirdly, over here and over in the US, the big thing was always the sexual content.
Oh yes, yeah, it was right. too. Yes,
it was like in GTA 3 and Vice City. It was like you can hire sex workers right from your car.
Yeah,
I don't want to do this in a game. I want to get out there and do it in real life. I'm a hypocritical politician. That's incisive. What I've done.
Very, very good.
Thank you. Cutting the human political cartoon is what they call me.
Oh, I thought you were going to be cutting this out of the episode so low quality.
But so like GTA 3, yes, and I think Vice City and then later San Andreas all had the thing where they launched, there was some issue that people had with the content in it, they took it off the shelves and put out another patched version of it.
At least in Australia, did this happen everywhere?
Not sure, but definitely in Australia. Yeah. You're
I
right.
have a feeling that it was only, I feel like we've always been worse with that kind of stuff.
Not with San Andreas though, because really? When that came out in 2004, there was the big fucking hot coffee thing.
Yes.
Do you remember that? And so it was a fucking mod that like the content was not technically in the game. They removed it, but you could, you were CJ, Elon Musk's least favorite character because they switched the, and you could date girls and then later on you could have sex with them if everything went well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a terribly animated sequence because it's not finished.
Yes.
You're still wearing pants in it, which is the only normal thing about what happens in the sequence. But so people got fucking wild about that. They were like, how can you put this content in a video game? It's the least, like, it's not at all violent.
Mm.
It's always like consensual and normal.
Mm-hmm.
But you can choose to do it in doggy style. Yeah.
But kids can do it. And it's like, well, if there was an appropriate rating, which I believe there was, right? There were ratings for these games.
It was, but the issue, I guess, was because so someone like patched it back in. It wasn't that difficult to change a code, but you had to either have a modded PS2 for it or the PC version. Yeah. You could just do this.
Yeah.
But because the content was, in their opinion, in the opinion of ratings boards, technically in the game, even though it was, you didn't have access to it.
Yeah. It was purposefully removed from the actual game.
But I don't think they saw that as particularly different to it. The code exists in there, so it is in there. It's, you didn't show it to us. So I guess I can kind of see that point, even though it's not really accurate because they did, you know, it's not accessible normally. Yeah. But so that was a big, huge controversy.
Yeah.
Which is fucking stupid.
Yeah.
But whatever, I guess if you frame it more as it being about you didn't show us all of the content, then I can see that.
But I think the bigger issue is parents buying games for kids and not really knowing what was going on in the games.
Yeah. Like, how would you ever know that a game called Grand Theft Auto would have questionable adult content?
Yeah.
Adult.
It's not like it says it on the front of the box or anything.
No. There's no... Yeah, anyway.
Yeah.
But those games were all fucking great. I loved the first three... GTA 3 was the name of the first one. But that little trilogy there
yes.
was fucking fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I missed everything about this generation. Around this time, loser. I'm out on video games at this point. I'm kind of at a point where I don't know. I just sort of drifted away from it. I'm getting into a point where, you know, just not having the disposable income for I'm working and at a certain point I'm working an after school job.
Right.
And all my money is just going towards underage drinking.
Oh, so yes. I was wondering what it could possibly be.
I'm just checked out on this whole, like, I think I ended up buying a GameCube used, like, right before the Wii came along. But right. I kind of missed all of this stuff. Like, I had friends that had a PS2 and would talk about the GTA games. And I was kind of, like, always interested in them. But, yeah, I think the 64 faded away, and then I didn't dip back in for a very long time. And I had a period where I kind of figured, okay, I guess playing video games is just kind of done. Like, maybe people were right when I was growing up. Maybe it was just a fad. Because also around me, like, that was a lot of the stuff too of just, like, you know, that awkward kind of teen phase that you go through where it's like you feel like you do have to kind of leave everything behind.
Right.
Not fully wanting to, but sort of thinking like, oh, okay, this is just sort of what you're meant to do.
Yep,
so,
definitely.
Yeah, I'm out. I'm out for a long chunk of time here. Probably until about 2006 or 7 or something like that.
That sucks.
You don't get to talk for the rest of the episode then.
Yeah.
See you later.
Wow. I wonder if this is because you lived closer to the city and Knox and I lived like a fair way away.
Sure.
And like, yeah, we were doing underage drinking as well, but there was literally nothing else to do except like go to someone's house, play video games, and drink.
And I wouldn't have been until the Xbox 360 was around. When that came out, that's when I popped my first can.
right. But I have vivid memories of, going to friends' houses and, like, going to the bungalow out the back and cracking some tins of Woodstock bourbon and playing GTA Vice City.
We, a couple of different times, had two Xboxes connected together playing Halo on two different TVs with a maximum of 8 players.
yes.
Look at that. But you could also, if you had them, you could connect 4 together. And have 16, which is fucking nuts. But this is like my personal kind of, you know, obviously rose tinted because I was like 14, 15, you know, the good age for it. But like a real bloody golden age.
Yes.
For me. Yep. There's so many, on the PS2, for example.
So you had a PS2?
I got a PS2 late in the thing.
Right.
I had an Xbox and then got a GameCube and then a PS2 because this was the point where I'd started to have a job at Target and shit.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, I'm going to put all this money back into the economy, baby.
So you go in day dot on an Xbox?
No, like a year after it comes out.
That's still early.
It's the one that, for whatever reason, everyone at my fucking school got an Xbox.
Really?
Don't know why, but it was an Xbox-heavy school.
Yeah, I had a couple of friends whose dads were real kind of like into the tech.
Yeah.
So it was always like, so they were like, yeah, this is what we're doing.
I think it was Halo that did it for the original Xbox for people.
Yeah.
That really, it was such a big deal at the time.
Yeah.
It cannot be overstated. Well, it probably could be overstated.
It was the biggest
Pope was playing it.
Yeah. I think it was a pretty even split among my friends.
Right.
There was even a few of us who just had PCs. But I do remember a lot of going to, what would it have been, 16th birthdays, and someone had brought their Xbox to this other Xbox house. Oh. And we're staying up all night drinking Red Bull, maybe.
Oh, hell yeah.
Would have been around at that time.
I guess so. That would have been the cartoon little ads stuff.
Which they still make and have looked the same for 20 years.
Mm. I remember being creeped out by them at the time for some reason.
They're kind of weird. Yeah, they're weird. Their character style is very weird.
I had no idea what Red Bull was. I was like, get the fuck off.
Yeah, I think, maybe I didn't know what it was initially.
Is a lot of them were weirdly sexual. It's like a princess trapped in a tower and then it's like this guy skulls a can and then he can fly up there.
Oh,
Red Bull gives you bonus was such a weird slogan for them. On the PS2, I just want to mention some of the things that were like kind of exclusive to it that were big deals. Metal Gear Solid was the big one for me.
Mm-hmm.
Metal Gear Solid 2, and well, actually 2 came out on the Xbox and there was like a PC version as well. But 3 was part of the reason I got a PS2 eventually because fucking Metal Gear Solid 3 was a big deal to me.
Is it the best one in the franchise?
I believe so.
Mm.
It's the 60s one that the whole thing is so cool. It's also the one you can probably play isolated and get the most out of.
Right.
In my opinion. So
does it sort of lean most heavily into like the Bond cinema tropes?
Yes.
Right.
Kind of like, or like early Bond, there's like, so you play a kind of 1 or 2 hour long like intro section and then a big like bum 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 kind of
movie plays that's got all like the psychedelic 60s visuals.
Right.
And the song is called Snake Eater because the subtitle is Snake Eater. Mm-hmm. And the whole song is someone singing about eating snakes.
Right.
Which is, I'm able to pull a couple of little jokes out of that one if you're willing to go with me on a ride.
Interesting. Were you, back in the day, were you holding court and sort of like, hey guys, get a load of this. I'm going to play this and then I'll have some comments. Yeah.
You know when
make.
She sings Snake Eater, I've got a twisted way of looking at that.
Nox turning up to school like Leno style with a little monologue.
Yes.
Little monologue about, hey, you see the Snake Eater? Yeah.
That's my school friend, Kevin Eubanks, over there. And then I told Conan that he could come up into year 10, but then I wanted to go back to year 10 afterwards.
Okay.
Leno in high school is what I'm doing.
Yep, no, it's good.
Thank you.
Was Final Fantasy was not exclusive to the PS2.
It was during this era.
What was it?
Yeah. Final Fantasy 10 and 12 both were on there.
Right. I think I played 8 on PC.
Right. 8 and not 9. 9 was exclusive to like the PS1. They're all everywhere now.
Yeah.
But Final Fantasy 10 I liked at the time. Then 11 was the multiplayer one.
Yes.
That was on the PS2 and the PC, and then there was like a 360 version later.
Again, one of those games where I had to be like, well, I can't play this. It's online.
Right. Every one of these consoles, so the Xbox had a modem built in, mm-hmm. the Dreamcast had as well, the GameCube had a modem you could buy for it, the PS2 had an adapter thing you could buy for it. Mm-hmm. So all of these consoles were online.
Yeah, yeah.
People didn't do it much over here at least because your fucking internet sucked.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I did get Xbox Live at some point and played Halo 2 online.
Right. Xbox
Fucked
Live.
Fucked a bunch of people's mums.
That was a new thing.
Yes. And it was a big deal.
Yes.
It was the most accessible and put together online service at that point, because even online PC games, everything was kind of complicated. Often it would be a little confusing. It would be decentralized. It was like often like cheating and stuff.
Yep.
Then there were these weird services like GameSpy where it was like, we'll search for a bunch of rooms for you. We'll have a cheat thing logged. But it was always weird and a bit janky.
Yeah, the only like almost good version of that was Battle.net, the Blizzard one.
Sure, yeah.
And then obviously they figure out online gaming with World of Warcraft as well.
Totally. And Microsoft did it for consoles. They were the first to have console DLC stuff. I believe that's the case. Maybe there was some weird thing where you could download something on the Dreamcast to like a VMU or whatever. I'm probably wrong. But like Knights of the Old Republic, it was like, get this DLC, it's free. Splinter Cell had a bunch of extra levels for it through there. It was kind of cool at the time. It came with a little headset you'd put on like you're a call center guy.
Yep.
And you'd be like, hey, I'm fucking your mom right now. It's the best.
But yeah, the main thing.
You'd always hear the noise. Oh man, this noise is still burned into my brain. The noise that would happen if someone breathed into their microphone. It still happens now, but just like the. Or you'd hear like Santeria playing in the background or some fucking assholes.
But apart from Xbox Live, the big thing about Xbox, the thing that won people over from every other console, every other platform, was of course Halo.
Halo was a huge ass deal at the time.
Yeah.
It was big. It was big news.
It was a genuine exclusive that people wanted to play.
Weirdly, there was a PC version of Halo.
Right.
End of Halo 2.
Right.
Like at the time. The Halo 2 one was made in like the late 2000s for Vista. They came out years after the initial Xbox launch of them.
Right.
Which didn't help them. But there was a popular PC version of Halo that for the multiplayer at least.
Did it launch with Halo?
Yes.
Yeah,
that came out day one.
Yeah.
And weirdly, the Xbox was like a sequel to the Dreamcast in a lot of ways, where like a lot of Sega games got made for the Xbox.
Right.
After the Dreamcast was dead. That initial fat fucking controller looked a lot like the Dreamcast one.
Which is interesting because Microsoft, they're not a Japanese company. You know,
no.
So it's like the first time you've got like a truly Western company getting into the mix with, in this sort of wave of consoles and everything and like making a big... And, you know, I think still to this day, like Microsoft doesn't really have anything like the market share in Japan that they have here.
Yeah, they've got nothing. They struggle in Japan.
Genuinely sold poorly in Japan, specifically the first Xbox.
And all three of them have.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
they've never done well in Japan and they've like kind of tried a little bit with it, but they have been very Western focused.
They also, but what they did do I finished the book that I was talking about last week, the Final Fantasy VII Oral History. Yeah. Microsoft got a bunch of guys from Square over, and they had like a little Japanese studio, and they were trying to get, and they kind of talk about how it was, you know, they were all debating like whether they wanted to like get together and do this thing for Microsoft, because they're like, why the fuck would we work for Microsoft? And then they try and... It's kind of like the dream team skeleton crew of Final Fantasy VII back together. Oh, what's the game called? Lost Odyssey.
And they made Blue Dragon as well for the 360.
Right.
Which was like an Akira Toriyama illustrated one, or like the graphic design, whatever you call it, is done by him. But they never really hit. No one cared about it. It was like this big bulky thing.
Mm. Yeah.
It seemed quite Western. It didn't appeal to people over there. In any strong way.
Well, yeah, it launches with this big, extremely Western style of game in terms of tone and design and gameplay, like a first-person shooter. It's very Western format.
For some reason, at this time in particular, there's a big gap between Japanese and Western-developed games still in terms of what they're like. And I remember reading this thing once that a big thing for people playing games in Japan to adjust to was camera control.
Oh, yes.
Mm. Which we've, you know, shooters had a lot to do with, where you move the right stick and you look around.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the same happens with the camera.
I do remember reading that as well. The coordinating, movement and camera was not natural.
And if you think about Japanese games, it doesn't really happen during this era in that. Like the Metal Gear Solids are still from top down. The Devil May Cries and shit are fixed camera perspective.
Most JRPGs.
Resident Evil 4, when it comes along, you plant yourself down and then you aim your gun separately to moving around.
Right.
Yep.
And it's definitely something that is indicative of there still being quite a big gap in terms of the style of games coming from both places.
Is it Halo 1? I think you've talked about this before. I think this is the game where to align the...
It's the one with the bear and the bird, right?
Where in order to set whether you're going to have inverted axis or not, it just, at the start of it, it says look around and then whatever you...
There's a guy like, look up, chief.
And then whatever you do, it sets it automatically. That should just be standardized.
Yeah.
That's such a clever, intuitive way of doing
it. Yeah, that is a bizarre thing to not have continued. It's such a good idea.
Sometimes the game will ask you at the start, do you want it inverted or not? I'm like, I can never remember. I don't know if I prefer inverted or not, because I'm not thinking. I'm just like doing what feels natural.
Yeah, it was smart. The way that they made console shooters work changed all of that.
Yeah.
There were like games that had done the two-stick thing before it, but people didn't really like it that much. There was a game called Alien... Resurrection. Was that the fourth movie?
Yeah.
So there was a PS1 game of that had the Halo control of use the right stick to look around. And reviews at the time, if you go look at them, people go, "This is fucking confusing. This doesn't work at all. It's stupid." Then like Red Faction, I think, came out before Halo 1 and had the same thing.
Yeah.
But Halo 1 in particular just figured out exactly the right inertia for it.
Mm-hmm.
Same as like there were side-scrolling things before Mario, but it felt right in Mario.
Yeah.
So that became the thing.
I remember just not buying FPS games for consoles.
Right.
Like maybe, what would I have had next? The PS3, but I guess I had a PlayStation and it's like, yeah, sorry guys, I can't play this game with you. I don't know how to do the joystick thing.
Right, and they were different on the 64 and stuff, like Perfect Dark and whatever, controlled very, very differently. I remember seeing a thing with the developers of Halo saying the big thing that they realized was they changed up the shooting so that you weren't really quickly aiming with the right stick and having to be accurate with that. You could kind of put it in a place and then your aiming was more done with your movement. So you'd strafe across where someone was and people would find it easier to be accurate with that. To like, and if you look at how you end up playing games on consoles that are shooters even now, you do kind of do that without thinking about it.
Go sideways a lot, yeah.
And like, and have your shot lined up, but not actually on the person, and then you use both.
You actually fine tuning it with the strafing.
Right,
right.
And so they figured out how weighty that needed to feel, how quickly you needed to move that. There's a really cool thing of, because those first two, maybe it was only the second one, came with like a little documentary about how they made it.
Right,
it was really interesting, and I loved the thing they talked about in that. That applies to game design with everything, where they're like, Halo is a 30-second long game. It doesn't fucking go for however many hours. It's 30 seconds long, and you repeat that same 30 seconds because it's fun, but it's move, hit someone, shoot, throw a grenade, move again.
Yeah.
And that's all that the game is, and it's 30 seconds long. It's a shit game in reality.
Yeah, yeah.
We've accidentally made a terrible game. It's 30 seconds. We don't know what we're going to do.
But we've tricked everyone into thinking it lasts for 12 hours and is fantastic.
But they made it very cleverly.
Yeah, yeah.
This is Bungie as well, who made like the Myth games on PC, I guess is worth mentioning. So and Bungie, they've done shooters before. They Bungie, did Marathon.
Those games, obviously the Halo games hold up Xbox as a platform and get people to transition over.
Do you know what's crazy as well? Just one more thing about Halo. That was nearly a Mac game.
Really?
Steve Jobs personally went to Bungie, was shown a tech demo of Halo. And he was like, they showed him lens flare and 90s bullshit. He was like, well, whatever. We did this in Toy Story. Pixar can do this. And they're like, Steve, this is running in real time. And 11 years later, Steve Jobs was dead. So you do the math.
Yeah.
But apart lens from flare causes cancer.
J.J. Abrams has killed so many.
Oh, well, he killed Star Wars.
Yeah.
So then Microsoft poached them. And Microsoft poached a number. They started that thing of buying up studios during this.
Well, they've got Bungie. That's great. So obviously they just got to pick another big studio that's produced a bunch of hit titles.
It's a surefire way to get good games on your platform, you'd imagine.
Absolutely. And I mean, if you pick a really good developer, they'll continue to make great stuff. And so in the early 2000s, Microsoft acquires Rare.
For millions of dollars. It was the biggest acquisition at the time. It would have paid so much fucking money for Rare.
I mean, talk about poaching. They take them away from Nintendo.
Yeah.
They buy them in like the early 2000s. Everyone's like, oh my God, Rare games on the Xbox. They put out Grabbed by the Ghoulies.
Grabbed by the Ghoulies.
That's the only one.
I think that's kind of also a bit of a part of why I'm out at this point too. Because I'm like, I've played nearly, you know, every major thing that's come out on the Nintendo 64, I've played it.
Yeah.
A big part of that was Rare. And then you hear this new thing's come out. They've left. They've gone over there. Then they're and I kind of was thinking, okay, I guess maybe these guys are so good. Maybe I'll get an Xbox. But then they sort of seem to not really be doing anything too good on it. So it's just kind of like, all right, well, the dream's kind of dead. I guess I'm just out for a bit. Like, the glory days are over.
It's so weird. Then they had two games at the launch of the 360. They put out, like, Cameo and Perfect Dark Zero.
Oh, yeah, right.
Ones. Cameo.
Remember that? That was meant to be a GameCube game originally.
Yeah.
Or even like a... Anyway.
But yeah, still on the Xbox, you got Splinter Cell, which became a massive franchise. Knights of the Old Republic, which you had to remind me beforehand, Nox, debuts on the Xbox.
Man. That was a good game.
It remains a good game. It holds up. It's so good.
Well, I haven't gone back to it in ages, but it was my favorite Star Wars thing at the time. I've never really liked the main Star Wars stuff, but there are some side Star Wars things that have been great.
Yes, Jedi Academy, like a few of those, dotted amongst there. But yeah, Knights of the Old Republic, that and the sequel I play kind of every couple of years.
Right.
I really do think they hold up. It's just incredibly written, RPG stuff.
Yep, Fable.
Fable
was the next one to come out.
I played it on PC and I loved it.
It was good.
Yeah.
It was a black and white was kind of the same, but it was really the Peter Molyneux hype machine of like him going, if there's a tree, then later on when you come back, the tree will have grown.
Yeah.
He was saying
the tree's still there.
So much.
The game
shit.
Remembers where the tree is.
Yeah. When you piss off an ant, when you come back later, all the ants will be like, it was literally shit like really nuts stuff where it's like, well, okay, I guess I believe you. Your beard grows. And then people play and they're like, oh, this is just a normal game.
Sure, yeah.
Chicken Chaser.
Yeah, Chicken Chaser.
I guess what it is like every, like the generations kind of before this, there have been these like huge leaps. Like you think about the leap from, 16-bit into 32 and 64-bit, like going 3D. So I do remember like at the time it felt like there was this real... People were just frothing when really this generation, as compared to the last one, really all that happens is graphics are, you know, they're 3D before this. Now they're a little more clearer and a bit more clarity.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, a bit more storage space so games can be better. And people are innovating within that. But in terms of, like, the leap of tech, nothing that – but there was this – I remember this, like, frothing kind of, like, you know, people just needing to think, like – oh yeah, it's going to become so much more intuitive in this technology, and the game's going to be able to read your mind and do all this stuff, and all these big promises, and none of it. All it really was things are a bit bigger and look a bit better, which is fine.
Hey, bigger and better.
I love bigger. I love better.
I love bigger. I love longer. I love uncut.
When did that come out? 99?
99, I think.
7, 2000? I reckon. I reckon even earlier than maybe 99. Who gives
it? 99.
Yeah, it's one of those 99.
Both seem pretty confident.
Big hitters.
Blame Canada.
We should do a bonus Patreon episode on the movies of 1999 because it's...
Let's do it in about 4 weeks. What do you reckon?
Okay.
June 30, 1999.
Yeah, right. There you go. But with the PS2 in particular, there was a lot of that stuff of like, games are going to be different. Mm. The emotion engine is coming. Yeah, do you remember people talking about that?
Yep.
It's like, you see how many fucking polygons are in this woman's face. Mm-hmm. And if you play the game happy, she'll be happy somehow.
Yes.
Look at this car. This car's got round wheels.
Aside from sort of the... semi-cinematic approach of the Grand Theft Auto games. Mm. I don't know that we get a really genuinely film quality game story until probably the next generation.
Metal Gear Solid 3 and 2.
Right.
Those ones are still doing that to me.
Okay.
Halo 2 had some pretty good shit.
Really?
I reckon.
Okay.
I reckon Halo 2 fucking looked okay and it had a couple of cutscenes.
I'm thinking my benchmark or my sort of line in the sand is probably Uncharted 2 for that, for what I'm talking about.
Right,
maybe.
Right.
Yeah. Yep.
I can kind of get on board that particular ship.
But there's another console that we haven't talked about at all yet.
What?
This generation. Yeah. There's another player in the market. A little player that goes by the name of Nintendo.
Little player that's got a little thermos and a little sandwich and some chippies in it because it looks like a goddamn lunchbox.
Somebody's discovered the color purple. They're like, let's make the Game Boy Advance and the GameCube both really purple.
Yeah, good point. One of them see-through.
They do see-through Game Boys all the time, I guess. But the Game Boy Color have been see-through purple.
Yeah, that's right.
And they'd had those see-through purple Nintendo 64s as well.
Yes.
Somebody bought like those, you know, purple. Those colorblind glasses that make you no longer colorblind?
Yes.
I don't know if those existed then, but somebody bought one.
These cunts want to suck off Grimace.
I wonder
if you paint something purple, that's what it means. Every Cadbury thing wants to suck off Grimace.
Yeah, anytime I do a painting or a drawing and I'm putting purple in it, I'm like, God, I'm horny for that big purple cunt.
Yellow and red, huh? Weird that you want to fuck Ronald McDonald, but all right. Make it yellow and red. There was the burnt orange one as well.
Really?
Yeah,
that looked kind of cool. And then they did like black and silver.
So I think Nintendo kind of struggle with that idea of, like we were saying, there's not really those big tech innovations and kind of leaps in terms of what's actually happening in the games other than just them looking better and having more space. But they, with all their IPs, they're just releasing a slightly more souped up console, controllers relatively the same, but they do all this stuff where they have a fucked up weird Mario Kart where you've got two people in the same car.
Yeah.
There's a Mario game where now it's set on a weird island. There's a Zelda
Mario's
game.
Mario's got a jetpack. Zelda's a cartoon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's kind of them trying to feel like, oh, we've got to innovate. We've got to do different stuff when... And these are all good games, but people probably would have been fine with them just doing a bit more of the same.
I loved the approach they had during this. I thought it was really, really cool.
I was going to say it seemed from the outside because I never... I don't think GameCube was a console that any of my friends had.
Mm.
Talking about some of these games in sort of special episodes we've done before,
they
all seem like kind of swings and misses. Like Sunshine, I actually played for the Mario special we did. I didn't get into
Sunshine's the worst Mario game, like by a quite a long way. Maybe one of those new Super Mario Brothers games is worse, but Sunshine's not good.
Yeah.
That is the one big miss, but I reckon they were fucking hitting the same as a 64-ish. And like the Wii, there's only a few games you're going to want out of it, but the ones that are great are fucking great.
Now, was Super Smash Bros.
Melee. Yeah.
Wasn't the first iteration?
It was the second one.
Right.
There's one on the 64 that has like 8 characters in it.
Right.
And then this one has like 20 or something.
Yeah.
Like, which for the time, like that was like for me the big thing of looking at the GameCube and going, holy fuck. Looks... Everything's a bit more rounded. It's not that jagged polygon. There's a bit more detail. They've got more characters in there. That was the one where they just threw it for the time. Of course, that it's small by comparison to the most recent one, but everything in the kitchen sink, like different all these different levels, all these different song tracks
right.
that you could have in there.
Bunch of single player stuff compared to the first one, which had nothing.
Right. Yeah.
All these like little trophies you could collect for doing certain things, and they were just like 3D models of Nintendo right. shit.
Which is yeah. what the Ultimate is sort of calling back to.
Like the stickers.
Yeah,
that,
yeah, know. Right.
That was very good. Wind Waker, I fucking loved.
It's great. Right.
It's so good.
It's really, really good. I remember that just the furor at the time when they revealed that.
People calling it Zelda because it was cel-shaded.
Oh, God.
Like, derisively. And it looks beautiful. It looks amazing.
It really holds up. That Wii U re-release of it, remaster of it, is great. Is testament to that, the timelessness of the look. Sunshine, yeah, I agree with you because I also kind of dipped into it for that bonus that we did. Yeah. I feel like it was well received at the time, though. I think it reviewed well back in the day, but it's definitely one that no one ever really talks about.
It was
these
middling
days.
For a Mario game. They were still like, oh, this is still good, but it was definitely like, oh. Especially when it was the sequel to Mario 64.
Exactly, yeah.
There hadn't been a Mario game since 64.
Yeah, so for quite a while.
Yeah.
In terms of reviews and scores, it's getting 9s and 10s out of 10s and A's and 92% across the board.
Yeah.
So it yeah,
people are just stoked
well.
To have a new one. And it's it's more or less, it's the same formula as 64.
With, I guess, something new, which I guess is not
But the jetpack was fucking annoying.
All
yeah.
the mechanics
it.
That they added were, yeah.
Having
to
like hold the trigger in and squirt your fucking water everywhere.
Yeah.
Oh, what an annoying thing to have to do before you played the game.
Before you played the game. Yeah. That's a twist on how we usually
that
say
that GameCube
it.
Controller was cool as well. Yeah.
I can't even picture what it.
So it's like a weird, like a boomerang shaped little thing. It doesn't have the full keyboard. Okay. You're looking at
the the special online.
There's
thing.
Like a big green A button in the middle on the right, and then like a little red B button. A couple of kidney shaped X and Y.
This is not a crazy looking controller.
No,
this
it's
is
got
comparable
the two sticks.
To modern stuff.
The C stick was weird though, and like the shoulder trigger things, they were analog. Up to a point, and then there was a little extra bit you could just chunk in.
Yeah.
So it kind of had a little extra. And so like in Metroid Prime, which is one of the best games in the world and was a GameCube game.
Yeah.
You'd like hold it in a little bit and you could aim and strafe or something. And then you pull it the whole way in and it would bring up a cursor that you were then aiming normally. You know what I mean? So it would have like two functions on there.
Well,
it was cool. It was very thoughtfully designed, it seemed like, but also very specific to Nintendo stuff and playing like Tony Hawk or whatever with it isn't the best.
I think maybe I have a bit of a misapprehension about the GameCube then, because it turns out like, so Metroid Prime is an entry in a fantastic series and it's a really, really good one from what everyone says.
It's probably my favorite of them.
Wind Waker is good, although that's down to taste.
I reckon everyone's come around on Wind Waker now.
I think it was just the style of it that really pissed people off, cheesed people off when they revealed it. But I remember when it came out, people going like, oh no, it's classic great Zelda. I think the big complaints at the time were the sailing around in the ocean took a bit too long at times and the kind of disconnected nature of that. But in the re-release, in the remaster, they kind of sped all that up. And I remember the big reviews being like, this has always been great. There are a couple little things about it that turned people off, but in retrospect, they've actually given it this real great, like evergreen.
Yeah, they sort of rushed it out a little bit more than they normally do, where there was like maybe a dungeon or two missing from the end, they did like this weird treasure hunt instead of that, which was kind of annoying. But it had the kind of open world thing like Breath of the Wild, where at some point it's like, all right, go explore the ocean, and you go to all these little islands, you'd be like, who's this Epstein guy on this one? This guy seems weird.
You got Melee, which again is still, I think, held up as maybe the best one for competitive play.
Competitive,
maybe
also
might
have.
Luigi's Mansion.
Luigi's Mansion
kicks off on this one.
Pikmin.
Pick any min. Animal Crossing.
So this is actually...
them taking some big risks and establishing a lot of stuff that's the blueprint for... Even like in the case of Mario Sunshine, they don't... you know, that's like a big departure, but it's also got the little bits in that, the little levels where you don't have the jetpack that are just the kind of pretty sort of self-contained little... Almost like 2D
box.
Mario levels, but in like a 3D space, which... Yeah. They come back to with every 3D Mario from that. So like really establishing a blueprint for what they're going to do with these franchises going forward.
Totally. Those sections of Sunshine where you're just Mario, you don't have the jetpack, look like what Galaxy ends up looking
yes,
like.
Yes, right. Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
What else have you got here for Nintendo? Rogue Squadron 2 is an exclusive.
A big boy is Resident Evil 4. Right.
Yes.
Yeah. I was about to say, this is listed as an exclusive. Surely not.
It was for a long time.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think it took at least a year or something for the PS2 version of that to come out. Huh. There was a PS2 version at some point. There was a Wii version, and now it's on every fucking toaster in the world.
Yeah.
But at the time, that was one of the Capcom 5. Which were like early on in the GameCube, they were like, yeah, maybe we lost our air, but Capcom's making 5 games.
Well, that's right. What are the other 4?
2 of them are cancelled, I think. One of them is like PN07, where
oh,
it's...
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
You mean the Pen 15 Club? Because I had that and I didn't have a GameCube.
What was that?
I reckon I can tell you what one of them is. Or am I... No, I think maybe I'm getting my companies mixed up.
We'll have a go.
Beautiful Joe?
Beautiful Joe. I was going to say that. Right. Yeah.
What a sick game.
I never played Beautiful Joe.
I really, really liked it.
Embarrassing that they misspelled beautiful in the title.
So stylish and cool. Such a, and yeah, really cool idea.
A huge error for cell shading. Because I love Jet Set Radio Future on the Xbox as well.
Yeah.
That was a great game.
I've got the Capcom 5 here.
There was a dragon one. There was something about dragons. Maybe it's not reflected in the title. But then you got PN03 or 07 or whatever it was.
Yeah, P.N.03. Futuristic like third person shooter.
You're a spy lady, right. And you do like, it's pretty much a game.
Spy lady?
Someone's seen like The Matrix and that bit of whatever that movie is where Catherine Zeta-Jones dodges the lasers.
Entrapment.
Yeah.
Formative movie for me.
They've jammed those two ideas together.
Right. Beautiful Joe, which I've seen, you know, some gameplay of. It exists. It's a game.
Yep.
Resident Evil 4. Killer 7.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Another cel-shaded one. Never played it, but it's...
Was that GameCube? I thought that was a Wii, or maybe they re-released it.
It was GameCube, and I think they put it out on the PS2 as well. Like, the Capcom fight, the only one that ended up being the thing was fucking PN03. Even Beautiful Joe came out on other stuff, I think.
Yeah. Dead Phoenix doesn't have a page.
It was like Panzer Dragoon or something, I think, was the idea.
Sure.
Resident Evil 4, yeah, one of my all-time favorites.
It's so good.
Yeah.
And at the time, it was like the best looking game I'd ever seen.
Right.
It was enormous. It had this really... It invented that type of third-person shooter that is what you consider to be third-person shooters now.
Ah.
Like Gears of War did the cover thing, but pretty much every other bit of that template is Resident Evil 4.
Yeah, right.
Well, yeah, I dip in very late on the GameCube. I get this game. And like I said, I never had the PlayStation. I've missed kind of the start of this generation.
Mm.
So I haven't played anything that's like a kind of serious, like got a bit of cinematic quality to it.
Right.
So I'm sitting upstairs on my little beanbag with all the lights off at night, just having my little Dax absolutely filled.
I've never played it still.
It's very good.
Be too scared.
I think the controls on the... I got the PS4 version in a sale. Because I was like, oh, maybe I'll fucking play this again. And the controls were a lot more awkward than I remember them being on the GameCube.
I heard that. Maybe I heard that from you. I bought it on the Switch for a long flight that I had and then just never played it.
Yeah. I don't know if it's... Yeah, the Wii version of it was really good. Because you could use the pointer as the thing and it actually worked really well.
Maybe I had it on the Wii then, actually. I don't remember much of what I... But that's another episode.
Yeah.
Mario Kart Double Dash on the GameCube.
Ben remembers what he had on the Wii.
Mario Kart Double Dash on the GameCube, I fucking loved.
Yeah.
I had a lot of fun with that with mates, especially if they didn't really, you know, people that were, oh, I don't really want to play, I'd be no good at it.
Right.
But you could team up and you had a second person riding on the back of your car that could just be in control of shooting shells and doing all that kind of stuff. And you would have like these little sideswipe moves that you could do if you hit the same button at the same time and stuff. It was a cool mechanic. Again, they've had a big hit with just... Straight up Mario Kart, and they're already feeling like we got to fuck it up and do some weird shit here.
Mm.
Yeah.
Really fun game.
I'm just going to do a quick little honorary mentions thing, I reckon.
Okay.
Because there'll be some games that I'm going to go like, oh, fuck, I wish I talked about that.
Yeah.
So I'm just quickly going through and having a look at a list of fucking things here. The Xbox port of Morrowind was good. End of segment. No, I loved Splinter Cell.
Yeah, I never played any of them, I don't think.
Really liked all of those games back then. Max Payne was very good. I can't remember if I said that on the PC thing.
Yeah, because we quibbled about who played Max Payne.
Maximum Payne.
Oh, just while you're talking about, while you're having a look and trying to find ones. Yeah, the Game Boy Advance. So
yes.
Nintendo
well,
after.
Yeah, we'll go into that.
But we can go.
Is that more? Wait, when does that come out?
Do it now.
When does that come out?
In 2001.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So go for it.
Yeah. Yeah, after, you know, what is it now? Like over two decades of just releasing slight retoolings of the original Game Boy, giving it color, slimming it down a bit.
Yeah, right.
It's crazy that it takes them that long to go, okay, here it is. It's way more souped up compared to the Game Boy.
Yeah.
But still marginally more powerful than a Super Nintendo.
Mm. Yeah.
Right.
But just even that, having that in a full color.
I don't think I know what a Game Boy Advance is. I'm going to look it up.
That was the thing at the time. They were like, it's a SNES, but you can hold it. And
It
wasn't quite there.
It looks like a Switch.
Different in a.
It looks like a Nintendo Switch.
Sort of. Like a sideways thing. Yeah. It looks like a Nokia N-Gage.
It does.
Which also came out during the way after. Mm-hmm. But that was the first like trying to put games on a phone and that fucking sucked. Mm-hmm.
Drove me crazy that it launched with a port of Mario Brothers 2, even though I like that game, a kind of 16-bit version of that.
Right.
And they have these Super Mario Advance games that are all just ports of, eventually Super Mario World gets one.
Yeah.
But they just never made an actual original Mario game with those assets for it.
So
it
weird.
Drove me crazy.
Zelda was similar where they put out Minish Cap towards the end, but that was Capcom again, like with the Oracle of whatever things on the...
Yep.
And they put out like a redo of Link to the Past.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what I had
and
on
that. That had that Four Swords adventure.
Yeah, the Link cable thing.
Yeah, plug your Game Boy Advance into your GameCube. And in like the Wind Waker, it was like... You know, Tingle? He's a Zelda guy. Real Zelda guy. Loved it. He would like go, plug in your Game Boy Advance. He didn't talk, but I assume this is what he sounded like. Plug in your Game Boy Advance so you can use that as a little extra screen to find
everywhere. That was a big one that was always touted that, again, was never really delivered on in any real way, the kind of the second screen thing.
It sucked.
There was a Mario Kart on there that was cool to be able to have that portable was like a huge novelty. One of the best things I had as a launch game was Tony Hawk 2, which was isometric view, but... really held up.
Wow. Felt
it's great.
Great to play. It's
a really good
fluid
translation of it. And the people who did that are the same people who are doing the remaster things of Tony Hawk 1 and 2 now.
Cool. Okay. Oh.
So they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Big Pokemon games out for it that I'd skipped that whole bit with like Ruby and Emerald and whatever.
Right.
There was some Final Fantasy re-releases like the SNES ones were put on there. Mm-hmm. And that's a place I played those.
Right.
Mother 3 in Japan. That was a big one for some people. It was a bunch of like the novelty of being able to play a handheld game was often still the driving thing rather than necessarily the exclusivity or the unique or the quality even of some of these games.
Right.
Yes.
Same as the Game Boy. There were like Castlevania games and stuff. Final Fantasy Tactics Advance I really liked.
Oh, yeah.
Back in the day. But yes, it was a lot of kind of ports of things or just like, this is like a lower down version of this other game.
Yeah, still. I think Wario Land 4 was on there, which was really cool.
Advance Wars I loved.
That's right.
Those
Advance
games are great.
Wars. Bring them back.
A couple of Metroids.
Sonic Advance.
Sonic Advance.
I remember Sonic Advance was actually good because that's when Sega have really been shitting the bed with 3D Sonics.
Right.
And then that being one where it's like they've gone back, they've made a 2D one, and it's good.
Oh, nice.
Just or it's as good as those ones were.
Yeah, right. If you like them, it's good. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was solo for that whole period of time. And then I think in 2004, both the DS and the PSP come out. But we'll talk about them next week because they kind of stick around more for the latter half of the 2000s.
Yeah, nice.
So that was kind of it for this period of time. You had your three consoles, you had your very separate PC, and you had one handheld option.
Yeah.
Out of those three consoles, I think the PS2 did the best.
Yes, it did.
By a mile.
Apparently by a mile, yeah.
Out of the GameCube and the Xbox, I think the GameCube even maybe did slightly better than the Xbox. Oh, I don't remember that specifically. Like, at the time, I think it might have been winning that. Had a fucking handle on the back.
Yes.
You haven't mentioned that. You meant to take your GameCube to work. I don't know what the fuck.
Yeah.
But I think... Or they were at least kind of neck and neck-ish.
Right.
Is my memory of it.
But, yeah, the story of this generation is the PlayStation continues to dominate. In fact, yeah. extends its lead.
Completely blows up. The PS2 is enormous. Nintendo continues their decline, it seems. People are talking about Nintendo being the next Sega at this
right,
point.
Right, yes.
And then...
I guess the Xbox is a success. It's a strong right. launch with great exclusives. It yeah. is a genuine new player in the market.
People it does outsell. It's Xbox, 24 million... GameCube, 21 million.
And right. the PS2
and that's
is
come
over
from
100.
Curly Brace 3 years ago on Reddit. So,
oh, okay.
Damn. The Curly Brace?
But yeah, as a comparison, the PS2 is over 100 million sales.
It's enormous.
It's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it's... So, the Xbox being a little behind where they want to be, they're competing with Sony.
Yeah.
It does do well for what everyone kind of thought of Microsoft entering console stuff.
Mm.
So their decision is, let's get the next one out real quick. Mm. Let's just do it. Let's cut everyone off at the pass. Let's get it out. So the Xbox is only around for like four years maybe.
Right.
And then they're like, here's a 360. Fuck you. It plays old Xbox games. Fuck you. It doesn't play all of them and it doesn't necessarily play that well, but it fucking plays them. A wireless controller. Fuck off.
Wow.
That's Microsoft's attitude with the 360, and that's why it like dominates the second half of the 2000s.
So, but does it come out before the second half of the 2000s?
Yeah, I think it's 2005.
Wow.
Like maybe early 2005 or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, that actually sounds right.
Which is the second half of the 2000s, I
yes.
suppose.
Yes, it is.
But I was going to say, we'll talk about it more next week. But just the context of having an Xbox in 2004 is like, this is soon going to be redundant.
Yeah.
All the magazines are like, Perfect Dark Zero comes out on the new one. Mm. Let's talk HD, baby.
Right.
We're moving from CRTs to fucking plasmas and whatever at the time.
That kind of move could hamstring... This whole thing. It's like, well, you just released this new console and right. already you're superseding it. Oh, is this going to happen again? I don't want to put my money into this.
Sure. To Microsoft's mind, I guess, though, they're going, if you've got an Xbox, this is a better one and it'll replace your Xbox.
And it right. can play all the old stuff. Yeah, that's a yeah. huge move.
That's
yeah.
true. Maybe it's early enough that there are people who have not bought any of the consoles yet.
And that's the main thing. They're competing with both the PS2 and the eventual PS3.
Right.
Which in Australia at least doesn't come out until 2007, I think. So they've got a big fucking head start
yep.
coming into the next little, the final little fucking stretch there.
Yeah.
One thing I forgot to mention about the Xbox as well that I want to say real quick is that it had a hard drive and that you could rip CDs onto it so you could have your own music playing in games.
That yeah. was cool. I remember that. Yeah. yeah.
The playing fucking Linkin Park underneath a fucking whatever while you're stealthing into a base.
All right, well, let's wrap it up for another week. We'll
but
be back.
We've still got so much steam.
We'll be back next week with the second part of the 2000s. Mm. Thank you very much for
Which
joining us.
Will be the last part of this history thing, right? The 2010s, yeah. we've kind of, I mean, we were doing this podcast for half of that.
Yeah. Mm.
And then
we wrapped it up at the end of last year.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's recent enough to. This next one will be the last one. This has been fun to do, though.
Yes.
It's been great fun.
Yeah.
Guys, head to filthycasuals.com.au if you want links to our socials, the premium Bandcamp episodes that we do, the Patreon where you can get a bonus episode every week where we're currently doing the 90s in popular culture year by year. Thanks very much for joining us. We'll see you next time. And as we say here at the end of every episode of Filthy Casuals,
welcome to the new millennium, baby. Is that what people said at the start of 2000? I couldn't even think.
Yep. Bye.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.